Well, there's apprehension in America as a former Minneapolis police officer goes on trial in that city over a death that convulsed the nation. George Floyd became the face of huge Black Lives Matter protests across the US and the world after he was pinned to the ground under the knee of policeman Derek Chauvin for 9 seconds in May last year. But how to find an impartial jury in such a prominent case, a process that began overnight? We didn't see the faces of those being vetted, but we heard their voices as they were quizzed about their capacity to bring impartial minds to the case.
My name is Pete Cahill, and I'm one of the judges of the district court. And you have been summoned as potential jurors in the case of State of Minnesota versus Derek Chauvin.
I definitely have strong opinions about the case. I think I could try to be impartial. I don't know that I can promise impartiality.
And do you have a general perception of police in general?
I think there's good and bad. You know, there's some people who abuse their authority and there's some people who use their authority for the better.
Potential jurors in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Well, Nancy Gertner is a former U.S. federal judge in Massachusetts. She's co-author of The Law of Juries, and she's a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. I asked her about the challenge of trying this case.
Well, it will be very difficult, but we have sort of ignored very substantial pretrial publicity in other cases. I'm in Boston, Massachusetts. We tried the case of the Boston Marathon bomber in Massachusetts. The numbers of Trump officials that were tried, notwithstanding Manafort, is significant. Not Paul Manafort, who was in who was the head of the campaign. We've done that. Whether we should is another question. But the problem is, in a universe in which there is saturated publicity, social media, cable news, if the standards of 40 years ago about pretrial publicity applied, very few people would be able to be fairly tried. So I think the answer is that the judge in the Chauvin case will give a very careful voir dire, questioning of jurors, individual questioning by lawyers, and take an extended period of time to do so in order to see if you can possibly find someone who has not been involved. So in other words, the answer is we do it, and we do it by using other techniques of selection.
Let me pick up on something else you said there, whether we should or not. What's your view on that?
Well, the problem is the perpetrator or the alleged perpetrator, the accused, has to be tried somewhere. And in most cases, it is, you know, should the case be moved to the next city or town or the next state? With George Floyd, I dare say there's not a place in the United States that had not heard about it. So the best we can do, it's not perfect, is to have as careful a jury selection as we know how to do. And that's what he's trying to do, at least from afar. That's what it looks like.
Now, I know I read in the New York Times there was an interesting process of letters going out to potential jurors well ahead of time, asking them questions about their views on the matter, asking them to write what they think about the matter in order to begin the process of sifting. Is that usual to send out that kind of paperwork?
It's usual in high-profile cases to send out a questionnaire. It enables the lawyers to we have two kinds of challenges to jurors. One is a peremptory challenge, which is a challenge for which you don't have to give a reason. And the other is a challenge for cause, which is based on bias. So sometimes the questionnaire answers will enable the lawyers to determine who is clearly biased and who's therefore they shouldn't bother to question. So, for example, if a juror questionnaire comes back saying, I hate police, I will convict them all, everyone will agree you don't go any further. Or if somebody comes back and says, you know, I think just the opposite, then you know you don't need to go any further. So it's a way of narrowing the pool of people you have to question.
I was interested to hear some of the early jury selection decisions. One was a person asked what they thought about the fact that Floyd had died under the knee of a police officer, and the response of the individual who was a potential juror who was then excluded was that seemed a bit harsh, words to that effect. It seems to be such a fine line. I mean, a knee on a neck does seem harsh. Could that person not be a fair juror?
It's hard to look at it in the abstract. So there was a case in Massachusetts, just as an analogy here, where a judge excluded someone who said, "I think the police are harder on African-American young men than on anyone else." And the judge excluded that person for cause in the lower court. It went up to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals recognized that that general attitudes about more harsh, less harsh, are the kinds of general attitudes which should be included in the jury. That doesn't necessarily mean in any particular case they would vote in one direction or another. The thing about the question you've described is that that was about the George Floyd case. In other words, it's one thing to say police are generally harsher on Black people than white people, but to say he was in this case is arguably prejudging this case. It is a fine line, but it's a line that we have to try to draw.
How long might it take to assemble a jury in this case, do you think?
Well, it really depends again. it looks like the judge is going through individual voir dire, individual questioning of jurors, and it looks like he's doing that, allowing the lawyers to question, and that usually takes longer. The amount of time the judge allows makes it, on the one hand, more likely to have a fairer jury because you're delving more deeply into each juror. On the other hand, there's always a risk as the time goes on that there will be, the exposure to publicity that they shouldn't otherwise have. So it's hard. I can't put a number on it, at least from what I've read in the newspaper, they're talking about, 2 weeks. But it's hard to say. It's really hard to say. The Tsarnaev jury, the Boston Marathon bomber judge, took about 10 days and was reversed because of decisions he made in not excluding jurors for cause. So the judge wants to err on the side of excluding arguably prejudiced jurors.
In terms of the charges, Derek Chauvin is facing a manslaughter charge and a second-degree unintentional murder charge, but the judge is considering adding a third-degree murder charge at the last minute. I mean, what's going on there? What's the explanation for that range of charges over the killing of one man?
The issue is the question of intent. How much did Chauvin intend? So the ranges of crimes go from unintentional murder in connection with a felony. That's one at one end. And then the other is manslaughter, which is unintentional, not necessarily as part of a felony and not necessarily, sort of extreme difference is the standard. In other words, the issue is what his state of mind. The act is pretty clear, right? He put his knee on this man's neck. The question is with what intent? And the range from manslaughter to murder reflects different intent. And I think that the prosecutor, they've charged him with second-degree manslaughter, and then they've charged him with second-degree murder. Third-degree murder is simply giving the jury another sort of alternative on the continuum. If they don't think it was murder in the second degree, do they think his intent was sufficient to be second-degree third-degree murder rather than manslaughter? So I think it's a question. The whole thing is going to depend on what he believed, what he intended to be doing as he was doing it. And they're just giving the jury options.
And do you think there's any prospect, is it possible for this case to be heard without a jury? Could it be a judge-only hearing?
No, that the only way that could happen, different states are different, but in most states, if the defendant wants a jury, the defendant gets a jury. It's the defendant's constitutional right. And the significance of the defendant's constitutional right to a jury is that the police officer here looks at all the verdicts around the country, and it is extremely rare for a police officer to be convicted, extremely rare. So he'd rather take his chances with a jury than with a judge.
And could this be a precedent-setting case if there is a conviction, given, as you say, there's a low rate of success against police in the United States?
Precedent. No individual jury decision is ever precedent for the next case. The precedent would be the kinds of charges that the judge allowed to go forward on. That would be the precedent. But a guilty or not guilty determination by a jury really doesn't provide precedent, doesn't bind the next jury. But the kinds of charges that were brought, that's a different issue. That could well provide precedent, not binding precedent. Nobody is required to follow it since every case is different. But it is significant that this officer was prosecuted and prosecuted with these charges.
What is the mood around this case now, especially given how emotive it was at the time and the months after George Floyd's death?
Frankly, if you want to ask me as an individual, what I would be concerned about would be if the jury in this case does what juries have done over and over again across the country, which is give police officers an enormous amount of discretion and believe that he erred on the side of, you know, his discretion, and giving them essentially erring on the side of police officers. I wonder what would happen if he is in fact not convicted and what kind of demonstrations would go on across the country. So that is troubling. Many years ago, almost, 30, 40 years ago, a man named Rodney King was beaten up in Los Angeles by the police, and it was caught on tape. The police were prosecuted and argued to the jury, well, there's stuff you haven't seen on tape in which this man was threatening. And the jury came back with a not guilty verdict, and there were demonstrations across the country. So I think the mood is apprehension at this point, and people are waiting to see what will happen.
Nancy Goertner, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Former U.S. federal judge Nancy Goertner.